and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering an exciting announcement from the Great Lakes Museum about the SS Keewatin.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. The Great Lakes Museum has announced that the SS Keewatin has been selected as the 2025 Museum Ship of the Year by the Steamship Historical Society of America, SSHSA. The Keewatin, an Edwardian-era passenger steamliner, was acquired by the museum in 2023 and opened to the public in May 2024. The SSHSA is a nonprofit organization founded in 1935 that now has thousands of members. Their mission is recording, preserving, and sharing the history of engine-powered vessels for education and research purposes. The Keewatin was nominated for this award by SSHSA members and chosen by the organization's awards committee. Great Lakes Museum Executive Director Beb Shippers shared her initial thoughts when she heard the news.
We were thrilled. We were absolutely thrilled that we were chosen by the Steamships Historical Society of America for this award. They have members that are international, and there's thousands of members. So the fact that we were nominated and then chosen by them was really kind of awe-inspiring for us. We are thrilled mostly because of how it acknowledges the hundreds of people that have been working hundreds of thousands of hours over the past many years, you know, tirelessly renovating her and promoting her through public educational programs. And we also, you know, are thankful because it also, recognizes that the community that's been supporting the ship and the museum, contributions from donors and foundations and governments and local organizations that also support us in kind with materials and labor, you know, all of which working towards her preservation and the success that she has as a tourist destination, and, you know, getting the recognition for that has been really special for us all.
Shippers also dove into the work staff, volunteers, and board members have been putting in behind the scenes.
The ship will be a labor of love for many, many years ahead. When she arrived in October 2023, there was probably up until the weekend we opened for tours, people were working every single day for probably 10, 12 hours a day working on, you know, new carpets, renovating, like repainting and working on handrails and revarnishing, like the number of things that were being worked on. I can't even explain them all. There's so many. Everything from fixing up the engine room. The engine is spotless. They spent so much time cleaning her up and making her very presentable for the public so that we could actually explain what they're looking at. Also, I would mention the hundreds of hours of the staging crew that went through and itemized all the artifacts that are on the ship. So everything from clothing to records to instruments, magazines, silverware, everything that's, you know, that came with her, and staging her to be presentable as though you were a passenger walking on. So you have that feel of the passenger experience. It's been a lot of work.
The museum celebrated the recognition on Saturday, July 26th.
We had members from the SSHSA come down, and that's the Steamship Historical Society of America. So members of their board came down. We had Ted Hsu was here, our MPP. We had the deputy mayor. We had board members. Community people came out from across Kingston. Lots of staff and volunteers were here. It was like a really nice celebration.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Morrisburg Leader, Philip Blanchet, about the closure of the Morrisburg Beer Store.
Thank you, Jesse. It is the last call for Morrisburg's beer store location in the Village Plaza. The Main Street retail location is part of the latest in a string of announced closures across the province following the expansion of retail alcohol sales. In 2024, the provincial government announced an overhaul of retail alcohol sales, which expanded beer and wine sales to convenience and grocery stores similar to arrangements in Quebec. Ontario's agreement with Brewers Retail, or the beer store, was signed in 2015, which continued a monopoly on sales outside of limited agency stores and the LCBO until 2025. Brewers Retail is owned by AB InBev, Labatt, Molson Coors, and Sleeman Breweries, including Sapporo Breweries, and has over 6,000 employees. Founded in 1927 when Prohibition ended in Ontario, the beer store has been largely the sole seller of beer in the province outside of the LCBO. Beer and wine sales in South Dundas have expanded to one grocery store and at least 8 convenience stores or gas station locations, including 2 en route service centers. In addition to beer sales, the beer store handles empty returns. Starting January 1, 2026, grocery stores which sell alcohol must also accept returns. The Morrisburg location will close September 28th, with 6 employees affected by the closure. John Nock, president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 12R24, confirmed the Morrisburg location has 5 unionized workers, 1 full-time and 4 part-time, and a non-unionized manager. The unionized employees can go to other beer store locations or take severance. The beer store has averaged an announcement every 3 weeks of new store closures, with an average number of 11 stores per announcement. At its peak in 2023, there were 437 locations in Ontario. Morrisburg is one of more than 40 location closures announced so far in 2025. Brewers Retail, the beer store, has been open in the village since the 1930s. And thank you to Philip Blanchard for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGIR reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Gananoque Town Council's decision to transform the Kinsman Building into a childcare facility.
Thank you, Dinah. Gananoque Council voted unanimously to support a proposal that would bring up to 49 new childcare spaces to the community, while also ending a long-standing lease agreement with the Thousand Islands Youth Boxing Club, which currently operates out of the same building. The decision, made during a closed session of council on July 15th, marks a significant shift in the town's use of the Stone Street facility, the former Kinsman Building, signaling a renewed investment in childcare infrastructure. Council directed staff members to proceed with the Canada-wide Early Learning and Child Care Plan, or CWELCC, targeting an opening date of December 31st, 2026. As part of the plan, council approved an extension of a contract with Bell and Associates to update architectural drawings for the expanded facility. The next step will see the proposal forwarded to the United Counties of Leeds and Grenville and the YMCA, which currently oversees childcare operations in Gananoque. In a separate vote, council passed a bylaw to officially terminate the lease agreement with the boxing club. The club will not be charged rent from July 1st to October 31st, 2025, at which point the lease will end. The Thousand Islands Youth Boxing Club will host its final class on Thursday, July 31st from 6 to 7 p.m. The club thanked their members, sponsors, volunteers, and supporters, saying that the club had been more than a gym. It was a space where friendships were built, confidence was developed, and youth were empowered, both inside and outside the ring.
Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about the expansion of Loyalist Township's Community Tree Initiative.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township Council approved the continuation of the Community Tree Initiative last week with consideration for expansion. Staff are now looking to bring back a funding proposal for the 2026 operating budget. The program supports climate goals, including the planting of 20,000 trees in Loyalist Township by 2034. The program was originally made possible through a $15,000 community grant. In its first year, grant funding supported the purchase of 125 trees by residents. Trees were valued between $165 and $175, reflecting a discounted rate the township received through bulk purchase. Residents paid $25 per tree, and the grant subsidized the remaining cost of the trees. The follow-up survey showed 100% of respondents recognized the benefits to the community. Most participants expressed interest in participating again, and over 75 residents signed up to be notified of future tree programs. With hopes of expanding the program, staff has recommended increasing the number of trees available each year, dependent on program uptake and success. The recommendation would be 250 trees in 2026. Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend showed his support for continuing the program.
The program is great. I do think it should be expanded. I think it conforms to our strategic plan. That's obvious, particularly with respect to our climate action plan. And I think we should find the means to continue to fund it through our usual budget process, which we do for all of our other items that come under our strategic plan.
Councillor Paul Broderick explained why he thinks the program should go through the budget process rather than a community grant.
By putting it through the budget process, we sort of have a better opportunity to look at our needs and what we can afford at that time.
Councillor Jake Ennis disagreed and explained why he wouldn't be supporting the motion.
I'm not going to support the motion. I think it's the type of thing that should be supported by the community grants policy, and I would like to see what staff would come back with as an option there.
Ultimately, the motion was passed, and the program will be funded through the 2026 operating budget. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about an ostrich rancher in Prince Edward County.
I'm here with Brittany Denowden, and we're feeding ostriches. These big youngsters are sticking their heads through the fence and gobbling up the grains. Brittany is co-owner of Streusvogel Ostrich Ranch in Prince Edward County and is one of only 20 female entrepreneurs across Canada to receive a visa grant. Brittany and her husband Caleb produce red ostrich meat that is high protein and iron, low fat and cholesterol, and is packed with vitamins, nutrients, and essential fatty acids. Sticking with their sustainability mission, everything from the flightless birds is used, including hide and feathers. I chatted with Brittany about the ranch and her recent grant award. Brittany Denowden, tell me why you call this farm the Streusvogel.
Yeah, it is Dutch. It means ostrich in Dutch. My husband has some Dutch background, and we spent a year in South Africa, and it was the Dutch immigrants in South Africa that introduced us to ostrich farming for the first time. So it's kind of an ode to the Dutch.
And so how long have you lived in the county?
I have lived in the county since, that's a good question, 2011. And my husband grew up in Frankfurt. And then once it was probably 1999 maybe, then his parents moved into the county. And so then he grew up in the county since then. Actually on Rennersville Road here where we are now. So he grew up since high school on this road. So once I met Caleb and we, after a year in South Africa, we settled back here in his area where his family was from.
And when did you start the ranch?
We started in 2020. Yeah, so we had lived in Consicon before and in Caring Place before, and then when this property came up for sale, we knew there was enough space to have our ostrich.
So why ostriches?
We spent that year in South Africa. Mm-hmm. We visited the largest ostrich farms in the world, and they are there. And we didn't go there to see ostrich farms, but we happened to stumble across them there, and we ate a lot of ostrich meat while we were there. And the ostrich meat was just the best meat we've ever had out of everything we tried. We tried just about everything, like kudu, crocodile, boar, all sorts of different meats, and ostrich stood out as just the best. And so we would eat it when we were at restaurants or different places. We'd pick ostrich because it was so good. Mm-hmm. And then after visiting the farms down there and doing like a tour similar to ours, but much more established. We came back to Canada and we couldn't stop thinking of our experience there. We rode an ostrich, we stood on an ostrich egg, learned all about, ostrich farming. And 10 years later, we just kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And it just never left our minds. And we thought we got to try it one day. And so bought our first ostriches and tried it out.
So how many did you have when you started?
We started with 10 little chicks that were about 3 months and under. And then we bought some, I think we started with 4 adult ostriches, all bought from the same farm in St. Eustache, Canada, and then in Quebec, Canada. Mm-hmm. And then we bought a few more birds from the States at different farms. Once that went well, then we were like, we need a bigger gene pool for our breeders. And so then we bought a few other adults from other farms. And then once we had that going and we started incubating and hatching ourselves, then it just exploded. And you have 100 birds in no time. And so then now we don't need to buy birds anymore. No. And now people start buying birds from us.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. So what do you do here exactly?
So we do everything. Like when you're a small farm, you kind of do everything. So we raise the birds for meat, but then we also breed birds as well. So then we're collecting eggs, we're incubating eggs, then we're hatching our own baby ostrich chicks, and then we're growing those chicks. And it's just like a whole like cycle here, starting right from the incubating process right up to like the breeding. So a little bit of everything, but meat is our main focus at the farm, is to sell the ostrich meat, because it is a really healthy, sustainable red meat. So we're all about the meat, but in keeping with the sustainability mission, if we're going to process them for meat, we want to use all parts of the bird. So then we also use their hide for leather, their feather for our feather dusters. We make all sorts of different leather products now with the leather, so purses and belts and bags and stuff. And then the oil, we have a skincare line now using the ostrich oil. We try to use all parts of the bird.
And it's a tourist spot.
And also now a tourist spot. We started out with just selling the meat online, and then we had a lot of people kind of knocking on our door, want to check out what's going on. And if they bought the meat, they also wanted to kind of visit the farm. And so then we realized we need to open this up because a lot of people are interested. So then it became a tourist destination.
And so tell me about this, the visa grant. How did that come about?
Yeah, we apply to different grants here and there. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't work out. But I'm always kind of applying to different ones. This one was a really great opportunity because it was just for women. And then it was one that you could use for any part of your business. So a lot of grants are focused for one thing. You can use it for marketing, or you can use it for like one sign or this or that. This one was very open, which is great. So we could use it for any aspect of the farm that we needed. And so it wasn't too hard to apply for. You did have to spend some time doing a promo video. But once I did that, I was lucky, I guess.
And you're one of only 20 in Canada that received that.
Yeah.
What are your plans for that?
So our plans is just to keep growing the farm. So we need like a new area for like chicks. We already have started using the funds. So we've already built like new areas for our chicks, and they, the more chicks we hatch, the more different areas we need. And so helping for them not to trample on each other, basically. So I think what we'll do is corner off new sections for our chicks, maybe build another little shelter. So many options.
You have quite a sized property. How many acres do you have?
We have 72 acres.
72 acres, wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you would like to add?
We always, like to add that we encourage other ostrich farms. So we know we can only do so much in our lifetime. And so the more ostrich farmers, the better it is, and we can collaborate and help each other. So we always encourage people to look into ostrich farming. It's a really unique farming opportunity. And we hope that there's more ostrich farms in Canada and in Ontario in the future.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE. WBEE County FM. I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about the planned replacement of three long-term care homes in Brighton.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Cobourg, Ontario. A massive new long-term care facility is being constructed on the outskirts of Brighton as the province and municipality look to combine three smaller facilities into a new 256-bed home complete with modern amenities for a community feel. The project has been years in the planning and development stages, requiring land availability, permitting, and zoning approvals by the municipality prior to shovels in the ground. Construction is already underway as the foundation is being built. As more seniors enter care, Brighton Mayor Brian Ostrander says 256 beds may not be enough to meet the demand in his community.
It may not be enough at the end of the day, but it's going to be a massive long-term care facility build for our community. It will increase the capacity for long-term residential care in the area because it's combining three existing homes into one, but also increasing the number of beds available. So we were just incredibly pleased that Omni chose Brighton as the site for this redevelopment, and we're happy to see it happening.
Let's talk to us about timelines on some of the construction. I see there is construction going on, concrete, foam. What's the timeline to get this project really off the ground and going?
Well, like any massive building project of this nature, it's going to be a couple years, so we're expecting a 2027 grand opening.
Now, in terms of the planning on your part, this must have been a couple years in the making to start discussing permits, location, design. Just walk us through that.
Well, the location was really Omni's decision, and the landowner who owned this parcel of land who made it available to Omni to purchase. It's right in our built boundary of the community, on the outside of our built boundary, but certainly in the serviced area, so it makes a lot of sense that we'd put a facility like this in this location. I've been texting and calling Minister Piccini for probably 3 or 4 years about this project, knowing that there was something in the works and wondering when we were going to be putting shovels in the ground. So today's a really good day when we're able to stand together and say, let's get going.
So on the back end, council planning, staff planning, What did you have to do to clear the hurdles out of the way to start getting the shovels in the ground?
Well, you know, as with any planning project, there's site plan approvals, there's rezonings that were required, there all sorts of those kinds of consents through the planning department. We have an incredibly nimble staff who worked closely with Omni and the ministry to get that red tape out of the way and get this project going. So incredibly thankful to the staff for doing that hard work and that heavy lifting, and incredibly thankful to council who sees the benefit in a project like this in our community and said yes.
Now let's talk about the building itself. We heard there's going to be a barbershop, there's going to be a lot of amenities, visiting rooms, but more importantly, it sounds like it's a building that's going to be a community, not kind of the old saying, it's kind of like a warehouse, but more of a community feeling. Yeah. Is that what you get from this design?
I see more than just a roof over people's heads. I see that we're building community here in Brighton in this facility. It's going to have a chapel, it's going to have visiting rooms, it's going to have, as you say, a barbershop. So yeah, it's going to be a community unto itself, and rightfully so for the residents who live here and may need those needs much closer to home than the rest of us do.
Now, staffing's always been an issue in the healthcare sector. Are you confident that you'll be able to meet the demand to get this building open?
Well, I'm confident that Omni has the skills to make sure they're hiring the right people for the right jobs, and I know that the Ontario government's working very hard on that skilled trades file to make sure that those people are here in Northumberland, here in Brighton, and here across the province of Ontario.
Now, when you talk about the three buildings being kind of merged into one, does this account for future possible needs? And you might be able to expand to another building or add a floor or whatnot. Is there the future needs assessment done to maybe accommodate more than 256 people?
I wouldn't anticipate that there would be an expansion. This facility is taking up most of the square footage that that you see around us here today. But I do know that the province is working very hard on similar rebuilds elsewhere. So we know what the capacity needs are, and we know what the demographics look like from a provincial perspective. And I'm confident that the province is working hard to make sure that these facilities are up and running for our senior community.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, August 7th, we're going to see a daytime high of 26, feeling closer to 30. However, just humid, no haze from wildfire smokes in the forecast for Thursday, August 7th. Friday, August 8th, 27, feeling like 29. A hot, humid, sunny, and ultimately quite beautiful day here in the city of Kingston. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, August 9th, daytime high of 28, feeling closer to 30. Sunday, August 10th, high of 28, feeling closer to 33. It's going to be a hot Sunday here in the city of Kingston. And then into the start of next week, Monday, August 11th, daytime high of 29, feeling closer to 32.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
Saturday, August 23rd, Gales Game Day returns to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Yes! I love football!
Tune in at 2:45 p.m. for the Grad Club pregame show ahead of the scheduled 3 p.m. kickoff for the 100th game between your Queens Gales and the hated Western Mustangs.
This is electric. Is unprecedented. This is Queen's football on CFRC.
Down the short set of stairs, join me, Grim, in the basement for my working knowledge of indie, experimental, post-punk, and electronic. Every Wednesday from 10 until 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Get ready to press record.
Awesome Kingston is Kingston's micro-grant organization. We've given away over $125,000 in micro-grants over our 12 years. We meet 10 times a year to hear pitches from our community, and every time we give one person or group $1,000 cash, no strings attached, to help fund their dreams. If you have an idea that might make Kingston more awesome, consider a pitch to Awesome Kingston to win one of our $1,000 no-strings-attached micro-grants. You can pitch at awesomekingston.org. Proposals are due the first Sunday of every month, and selected pitches are heard the third Thursday of every month. Once again, pitch your awesome ideas at awesomekingston.org.
Hey,
Hey Kingston, looking to conserve water and save money? Utilities Kingston is once again offering its popular repurposed rain barrels. They help conserve treated water, reduce your environmental impact, and give new life to materials that might otherwise end up in a landfill. Rain barrels are just $71, including delivery, and are sold at cost to support sustainable water conservation. Order yours today at utilitieskingston.com/rainbarrels.
Hey, hey, hey! You want to kick the summer heat and get a nice treat? Don't hesitate to make a date to visit Old Farm Fine Foods. Pizza, frittata, sausage rolls, sandwiches, soups, and more are ready and waiting to get in your belly. Plus, you can also buy fresh and frozen food to prepare at home. Pop into the shop Monday through Sunday between 8 to 6 at 204 Berry Street. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at Old Farm FF to get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Buju Anim.
Danach A. Ak Anzeni Shukwithan.
Tanse.
Ay, Inuhadikay.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Hi, I'm Christine Genier. Welcome to Words and Culture, the Athabascan episodes. Chan Shankle Nanije Dunke, Akan Zenu Shokwithan, Danat A. I love speaking in language, Dunke Koshe. I also love speaking about language. I do, often, and with anyone who wants to listen, and sometimes even with those who don't. However, I find speaking about Indigenous language to be an ongoing conversation, a nuanced and layered conversation. There are ways we think in Indigenous language which don't apply to European languages, and certainly not the languages of colonization in which we've all been conditioned. The rules are different. The structure is different. How do you explain this in short burst conversations? One point explained often just opens the door to two more questions, especially if you are still thinking English way. That is one of the things I've really enjoyed about this work with Words and Culture. It has offered a multifaceted lens on a multifaceted conversation, different perspectives as unique as the dialects they are speaking from. These conversations also underscored our common ground. These things which so clearly make us related, make us family. Eshgachlan. And to be able to share a small slice of the beautiful world, which is Dakhwanje, our languages, in what is now known as Yukon, with the rest of the world. I met Lenita Alatini when we both joined the cast for Dreaming Roots in 2021. The world was still masked, and our first few meetings were over Zoom with a cast and crew of over 30 people, ready to undertake what would have been an ambitious project in normal times, let alone when the world was still very much masking, testing, and distancing. Hence the Zoom. We wouldn't come together in space for months into this this big project to bring together the first show of its kind, a variety program bringing all of the Yukon First Nation languages together on stage to lift up and celebrate performance, language, dance, and song, Dunk-A style. That is when I got to hear Lenita sing a song telling of the hopes, the dreams, the fears, the angst of our youth. A beautiful plea to the older generations. I soon found out that Lenita was not only learning Dakhwanje, she was teaching Dakhwanje in her community. This young person with a contagious optimism about life is exactly who I wanted to speak to about the future of Indigenous language in the Yukon. I drove out on a sunny spring Saturday, 3.5 hours northwest from Kuan Lin on the Alaska Highway, to the traditional territory of the Kluwani First Nation, where Dakhwanje, Xuan Man Kei dialect is spoken. I enjoyed a good visit with Lenita and her dogs. We had some tea, we laughed a lot, and we talked about language. I'm with Lenita Alatini at her home in Burwash, Yukon, on Xuan Man Kei. Hello, Lenita. Dancha.
Dancha. Shantli. Danke, danche.
Thank you, Shonisan, for inviting me to your beautiful home. Nikki, show Kwishuniki. You've got beautiful land here.
Yes, thank you. The land was happy to see you come through.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, Lenita. Tell me where you're from.
ING Tikra Senye, Ama Midiye, Ata Tevita Uye, Asin Shao Tikra Sen Uye, Asin Fred Chambers Uye, Na Asin Gedia Uye, Asin Ken Burns Uye, Ninje Tluan Mankayi. My name is Lenita Alatini, and my mother and father is Mathia and Tevita Alatini. My great-grandmother is Lena Johnson, and my grandma and my grandfather are Mary Jane Johnson and Ken Burns. My home is in Kluwani Lake Country in Burwash Landing, Yukon Territory. I was born up here in Whitehorse, Yukon, and moved back to Burwash in 2010 and have pretty much lived in the Yukon ever since. I graduated in Whitehorse in 2019 and since then have mostly been working for Kluwani First Nation in their Public Works Department, also as a member of their Youth Council executive. I recently just started teaching Southern Toshone to adults in Tluan Man Kai. So we're going to be having our graduation ceremony in a few weeks here. So I'm very, very excited and just so proud.
I'm very happy to hear that. So I was going to ask you, Danjantha, but if you teach the language, then you must be able to hear it.
I am teaching adults, but also still learning at the same time. So it's been a crazy journey. I graduated this program in December of 2023, and now to be teaching it just after recently graduating is a bit like, oh, wow.
Okay, so the program that you graduated, tell me about that.
So that's actually the same one that I'm teaching. It is the Paul Creek Curriculum Dunke Kwinje Textbook 1. And right now it's just learning like basic vocabulary of Southern Toshone language. So it's a 15-week program, and we teach one class every week, and it's about from 9 to 5. And the lesson plans are we teach 3 lessons a day, which is, it's quite a heavy course load, but it's, the method is proof that it's worked, and we're creating more and more speakers every so often. So it's broken up, and each lesson is about 10 to maybe 15 words a lesson, so you're learning, and maybe 4 sentences, so you can learn up to like 100 words just within one day.
That's a lot.
It's tons. And it is quite fast-paced as well. It's a huge commitment, right, from 9 to 5 once a week. But the course does fly by. And as much as people like may think that they're not retaining things, it definitely goes to show, like, at our final exam, we do a written exam, and then we also do an oral exam where our students remember at least 15 sentences or create their own sentences that they'll present to the class, and that's how we grade them there. And it proves, like, these guys are remembering everything that we're teaching them. So it's so cool to just to be in such a small community with so many people willing to learn the language of it.
When you were Dunana, Dushiela, when you were a little baby, yeah, did you have Dakhwanje around you?
Okay, question. Thank you. Kitsilanku in Destruction Bay, they offered us one class for, like, there was an intermediate classroom and then there was a primary kids classroom. So we would split up in groups to learn language. And Dayet, my omea, who was actually our first language teacher in Kluwani Lake School. So it was really cool. I was able to grow up with that as a part of our education system, but also outside of school with my great-grandma being Tuklasen. She would always speak to me, even if I didn't know what she was saying. She would just kind of da-da-da-da-da at my face, and I'd, okay, yes. She still does that, and I'm still sometimes, I'm like, oh, wait, what? What are you saying?
But now that you are at this level in being able to speak, at this level of Kwishe, do you believe that your grandma speaking to you as much as she did in that way when you were little helped you now?
Yeah, that definitely helped me, especially pushed me more to want to learn this, because I would always see Grandma Lena and Grandma Margaret speaking with each other all the time. No matter what the event was, they'd all be sitting together and you could just see them chatting in Dunke all the time. So I'd always ask them, what are you talking about? What are you saying? I'd be like, oh, that's good, don't worry. So to be able to, like, chime in now on those conversations compared to, like, going back and be like, oh, I wish I could understand what they're saying. To be able to pick little bits and pieces of their conversation out now is just, it's special. It is. It's very gratifying to be able to somewhat understand her now. And again, like, I'm still learning as well. And I remember one day that I went over to Grandma's house, and it was a nice Saturday. I went to go visit her, and I told her, I was like, oh, assume, aku, can it's all? And she just looked at me and said, who's getting drunk? I was like, what? I didn't say that. I said, I'm going to clean my house. And she's like, that's not what she said. You said, he's getting really drunk. I was like, what? Scratch that. So still learning, but it's nice, like, she's still there to be that corrective curve, but in a fun way. It's not like, that's not how you're supposed to say it. Don't say it at all.
And if you can get corrected, I've noticed too for myself in a funny, fun way, yeah, that you always remember.
You will now. So it was pretty hilarious. I still, like, have to be very conscious of what I'm trying to say, especially with her ears. Like, she just knows. She just knows when it's wrong, or if you're saying it with too high of a tone or too low of a tone and turning it into a different word. It's so cool that at 95, she can still pick that up and be like, oh, wait, not this way. It's said like this. And it's like, oh.
Living in Burwash, living in Kluan Mun, Kei, do you have an opportunity to speak a lot on a social level?
Not as much as we would like to see, but that's the hope with bringing the Paul Cree curriculum out to the community, as well as trying to get citizens enrolled to, like, create that social space where it's okay to speak language, and it's okay if you're just learning or if you're super advanced, you're all there for a common practice, mm-hmm, right? So, I mean, I definitely took the liberty of kind of doing, like, little flashcards around the office just to put up, so, like, on our coffee machine, like, entleokuti, or our cups, and even in, like, our bathroom paper towel, like, kukuye katsaniche, like, just having those little things up around the office, like, I catch people trying to say them all the time. So I'm like, oh, it's day by day. But I do, like, even with our receptionist, she's a really good friend of mine, and I'll just speak language to her, and she doesn't know what I'm saying, but she's just like, oh, yeah. But it's funny, I was texting her, and I texted her in Dunkey because she said, oh, I'm just feeling sorry today. I was like, oh, Kara, Jisha Kodiche, Dishan, Ku, Tikasin, Sherchui, Da. And she's like, gee, I just know what you're saying. Get out of here, you bad influence. And I was like, it's so funny how I just speak to her all the time, random nonsense, and she's picking out these little words and put them together. So I was like, oh, wow.
I have found that even with like Ali, my spouse Hiju Koshie Danke, he doesn't speak in our way, and but he's very willing to listen. You are, I want to come back to the Paul Creek curriculum a little bit, because you are in level as a student, and then a part of the curriculum is that students teach.
Yes.
So you found yourself in an environment where you're teaching Nihro, where you're teaching your elders.
I am. I'm teaching my grandma Mary Jane Johnson in Danke Kwenje Tlaji. And it is just... it's so gratifying to just see her, like, smile watching me teach in front of her and just be a willing participant, like, in that space. She's not just my grandma, you know. She is someone who's there to reconnect. She's someone who's there to learn about her culture. And going through residential school and everything, I could imagine that. Coming back into a classroom space where before, you know, you weren't even supposed to talk our languages in a classroom. So just seeing how powerful and brave that she is to overcome that trauma. And she's like 65 now, you know, you can do it at any age. And she's just, for me, she is proof that you can overcome whatever. Because she is still powering through very strongly and learning her language as an elder. And when she was a youth, that was obviously taken away. So for her to reclaim that, and in front of me, her granddaughter, is just like, you're so awesome.
Do you think of it maybe like a gift that you're giving your grandma?
I want to. I really hope that this is something that we can both just remember and hold on to, because it is special. It is, like, I'm teaching alongside her daughter, my auntie. So it's so cool for both of us to be teaching her. And she's just someone I hold so dearly to my heart as well. And I think, yeah, you can just see it in her eyes. Like, she is just... she's overwhelmed with joy. It's just so amazing. Like, I remember when I was young and we'd go out to moose camp, and here we'd be cooking on the wood stove in the wall tent, and she's teaching me Danke. Like, probably one of the first words that I remember is Quince. And she taught me potatoes. And it's just because we'd always be cooking potatoes in the wall tent. But seeing how far that she's come just from teaching, you know, teaching me my first few little words to me being able to teach her hundreds of words. It's so beautiful. It's so special.
It's like you can almost envision the knitting back together.
You can feel the strings almost reconnecting. That's like, we're flimsy there for a little while, but things are starting to just feel stronger as a community, and especially just in my family personally, like, we're building that connection again.
So we had talked about you growing up with language around you, and then going into the Paul Creek curriculum, where it really started to help solidify the language in you. What has helped you the most to drop in language?
I think just the idea that, you know, my great-grandma's the only fluent speaker left here who will openly speak. And just to know that, like, that's our last hope right there, you know? The last thing that I want to see is my language die off. So I just, like, keep keep that spark alive in the back of my head and just always remember, like, even if I'm just having a conversation with Colton at home, throw in a little word. Like, just in, like, everyday conversation, trying to incorporate that into my lifestyle and how I live as a person. I really hope that in the long run that it will just improve my whole ability to speak my language very confidently in turn. So I just having like conversations with people who don't even understand me is like just my way of making sure that I'm still, that I know that I still have that in me. My language will always be sitting here. It's just about using it.
I like to say that we're not really learning our language or teaching it, but we're helping each other remember.
I think so too. That's such a, like, yeah, when I first began the Paul Cree curriculum, like, they really, really emphasized the fact that, like, the teachers are still learners, and I feel like that's how it's going to be for a long time, you know, like, until we can build that language capacity in the Yukon, but it's a start. Right? We have more people now speaking to each other in our own languages than we have ever, yeah, from what I can recall. And it's just so cool to see, like, Native Hockey Tournament. Oh my gosh, I was talking people's ears off the whole time.
And they had color commentary in Kaska for the first time, like, this year. That was
how
huge.
Amazing is that? And, like, the First Nation Hockey Tournament is, like, the biggest event of the year in Whitehorse. So for it to actually be representing First Nation culture in the game,
yes,
it's what we need. Like, that's decolonization.
Okay.
Yes. Ugh.
So you know that word we have for right here, Aiedo. Aiedo, right here.
Yeah.
The only reason I bring this up is because the way that word rolls, Aiedo.
Aiedo.
I love it. It feels good. Yeah. Do you have any words like that that you just like saying? Just, yes, not even what they mean, but how they feel to say.
Yeedadalo.
Yeedadalo.
Yeedadalo. What are you doing later? That's just probably my favorite. I love you. Say it to anyone. Yeedadalo. Just sounds so cool. Or another word we actually just taught the other day is chair. Ukai datsara.
Alright.
Ukai datsara. I actually have three. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Kakadan. Kakadan.
Kakadan.
Yes, K-A-K-A.
Kakadan.
And before we learned it as Kenidan. Kenidan.
Okay.
Because teacher done Kenidan adaki. But I guess, yeah, Grandma Lena changed it, so Kakadan.
Kakadan.
I know I've been saying that after every class. So Shotan Kuiste Dan Kakadan. Okay, Lenita. We get it.
But do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you?
Kakadan. Are you looking forward to maybe teaching Dunana someday?
I've definitely been putting a lot of thought into it for sure, because that's the right place to start is by teaching the kids, 100%. And we're kind of going backwards. We're teaching the adults right now. But I think that, yeah, the kids just need to be reminded, like, this is important. You know, this is a part of who you are as a person, and it always will be. So I really just hope that, like, the kids now can start kind of understanding, like, it's okay to express your culture, and it's okay to learn about yourself, and it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to ask questions about your language or about your culture or about what regalia you should wear, and just, yeah, I think it is really important to start teaching the kids, and I do hope that I can kind of lay a foundation down for them. Like, this is cool. You will be able to have secret conversations with people, like coax them into learning language. But no, I do hope that one day that I can, like, just maybe just not even like teach them language, but just let them know, like, how important it is to start reclaiming this as young people, as young First Nation people. Because, yeah, like, when I was their age, I was like, language? I speak English. No thanks. So just to let them know, like, yeah, it's okay to completely dive into who you are as people, you know? And it can definitely be confusing being a young Indigenous person out in this world. So just to know that they have their community's support, you can always call someone up and just want to speak with them, you know? Like, just to have that foundation for them, that safety net for them. That language will always be there.
Sure. Thank you. Shroni San Kwishroni Lanida, I have a lot of gratitude for you. And thank you very much for having me in your home today for this talk.
Shroni Dan, thank you so much for having me on here. I'm so honored that I get to speak with you and just catch up and chat about all these good things. So thank you so much, Shroni Dan.
Shroni San Lanida, Kwishroni Di, and thank you for the beautiful reception and welcome into your home. Lanida Alatini is a language teacher in Burwash, Yukon. Next week is our last episode of the Athabaskan episodes on words and culture. It has been such a pleasure bringing you not only my language, but those who are closely related. I'm going to leave you with a song this week. This incredible Yukon hip-hop duo, Vision Quest, were nominated in 2018 for the Indigenous Music Awards. Nick and Yudi's storytelling skills grab you, give you a rattle, get you to sit up and listen, as they do in this powerful piece. This is Vision Quest and School's Out.
I don't wanna do this all alone.
All alone now.
Mama, please don't let me go.
Don't let me go now.
If I go, I swear they'll change my name.
They change my name too.
I don't think that I will be the same.
Never be the same for you.
I don't wanna do this all alone.
All alone now.
Mama, please don't let me go.
Don't let me go now.
If I go, I swear they'll change my name.
They change my name too.
I don't think that I will be the same.
Never be the same for
you. I wanna go back to my roots. Stole that from me, now we have the proof. Everybody wants the truth. Coming out the ground and they took that too. My family had to do things that aren't talked about. My generation felt affecting the mental health. This grief will let us free. I'm talking you and me. Don't gotta let it cut so deep. Only got one family tree. Everybody plant a seed for the babies, watch them grow. Ain't no mountain high enough, it's just another obstacle.
School's out.
I don't wanna go. Please don't let me go. Save me from these people. Mom, don't let me go.
All alone.
All alone now. Mama, please don't let me go.
Don't let me go now.
If I go, I swear they'll change my name.
They change my name too.
I don't think that I will be the same.
Never be the same for you.
I don't wanna do this all alone.
All alone now.
Mama, please don't let me go.
Don't let me go now.
If I go, I swear they'll change my name.
They change my name too.
I don't think that I will be the same.
Never be the same for you.
Hold up, wait for a minute. Close your eyes just to envision it. We're going back like 50 years or so. Buckle up, son, this is me. I'm serious, I wanna fix this here and now. No more excuses, clear the clouds. Residents of schools gotta tear them down. Unearth those children and free them now. This guy dressed in black with a cross on his neck, dragged my brother through the grass. Oh, fuck that, I tried to run. A man in red with his hand on his gun. Bought me in the face with the stock of the gun. Lights out, tossed in the truck. Wake up, miles from home with a bloody nose and a puddle of
as
blood.
As many of you know, or may not know, that all letters sent home was censored. They tell us to write letters home to our parents, which made us very happy because it was the only contact we had with our parents, is some letters sent home. In my letters, I had tried to explain the abuse that was what's happening.
I don't wanna do this all alone.
All alone now.
Mama, please don't let me go.
Don't let me go now.
If I go, I'll swear they'll change my name.
They change my name too.
I don't think that I will be the same.
Never be the same for you.
I don't wanna do this all alone.
All alone now.
Mama, please don't let me go.
Don't let me go now.
If I go, I swear they'll change my name.
They'll change my name too.
I don't think that I will be the same.
Never be the same for you.
I get to the school that was made of stone. Children in the windows crossed on the dome. Field in the back was a graveyard zone. The older kids were forced to dig alone. Forced to bury your family's bones. Forced to live like a religious clone. Forced to leave your traditions at home. Forced to do things you never want known. Well, guess what? It's thrown wide open. New chapter, not new chapter. We've seen our people burn those teachers, turn us into ashes. We need to rise above, release the silence of the dirty history buried beneath Canada.
For me, it is very hard to talk about it. I didn't even talk about the abuse in residential schools to my children. And today they're shocked to hear what is happening, especially the finding of the babies. And I told my youngest daughter, no, I didn't want you to know what happened.
I wanna
to
do
me.
This all alone. Mama, please don't let me go. If I go, I swear they'll change my name. I don't think that I will be the same.
School's out.
Words and Culture is made